Renee Brussel in Carmel, California. This is tape number 417B, side 2, November the 30th, 1979. And we'll do some more on the Iranian crisis. This is a part 2 on the Iranian crisis. There are so many precedents taken in this act of the Ayatollah Khomeini against the United States that it's hard to list all of them. There's so many that come to my mind. But one is, when he's asking back for the fixed $56.5 billion, a suit against the Shah, I think of what happened when the war in Vietnam was over and Premier Thieu couldn't leave because the plane was so heavily loaded with solid gold. He had to repack the airplane, and Premier Key went down to Southern California. And it seems that the officials in Vietnam took out extreme wealth. And then after the war was over, they were bankrupt, and the Western world said, see, you can't make it. You're no better than when we were there. You're bungling it. They were left without any money. When the Tsar's family left Russia, when the revolution came, the wealth, gold, billions and billions of dollars were taken into Manchuria and drained out of the country so that the peasants, when they finally took over with the revolution, the Bolsheviks, the wealth was gone. All of the money was taken out of Germany at the end of World War II and taken to South America, Central America, Middle East, and Asia. And, of course, the United States had to invest and put money back, our own money, back over there to rebuild Germany so we could watch and have a bulwark against Russia another time around. But the money taken out leaves the host country totally bankrupt, and then the other people, countries, can sit back and say, well, see, you can't do any better than we did. And the truth is that they don't have the capital to do it with. And here is Khomeini asking for the money back because he says, we're bankrupt. You took $56.5 billion, give it back to us, and give us a chance to do with that money what you did and see if we don't do a better job than you did. Instead of buying jewels and gold and diamonds, give it back and let us put into agriculture equipment. And that's what we need, and grow our own food instead of importing it, which the Shah forced them to do. I don't know how many of you saw a speech by Khomeini last week. It's titled, The World is Not on Our Side, and it was reproduced in the New York Times. It's a very important speech because he talks to Jimmy Carter and refers to him as a man who's an oppressor, and he says that he has a psychological disease that we in America have. He refers to it as a psychological illness. This disease has caused you to regard the great masses of the world as not belonging to the world. Khomeini said Mr. Carter himself and other people like him, maybe number 50,000 out of the entire world, the rulers, the ruling class, the people who have their hands on the weapons and on the capital, are 50,000 people. But Khomeini said that these 50,000 people don't see the various stratas of society, which are compared to oceans. He says that Jimmy Carter and those kind of people are only droplets, that they have a disease of self-glorification in which they can't see what other people feel. And Khomeini said that Carter intimidates us with military threats and economic threats, but he's beating an empty drum. It won't work. And he quoted Winston Churchill, who in the last war said, victory belongs to those who sit on a wave of oil. Khomeini says, you plundered us, you took away our oil, you gave us guns and rifle, but these weapons were for your sake. We don't need them, he claims, we don't need them at all. And he said, America needs oil, and you gave us all these things just to maintain your power here. He doesn't want those weapons. He wants to cancel those debts. Khomeini went on to say, if the world is what it is, and if it consists of the oppressed people, if the world reality is that the oppressed people run the world and the oppressors offer nothing except corruption. If that is the world, then the world is not on your side. This world does not approve of a president who claims to be a champion of human rights and who creates so much evil for humanity and kills so many people, Khomeini told Jimmy Carter. And he again referred to the psychological illness which Carter has, and that he equates spies as diplomats. He says spies are not diplomats. He said the heads of countries who act like this towards other nations, who act like this towards the oppressed people, should change their minds, and that you can't send people over and call them diplomats when they're nothing but spies. And he goes on to say, Khomeini said, people have changed. they're not the same people you think they were, and that you're dragging us towards destruction because you don't understand what people think and you want them to submit to you. The name of the lead article reproduced in the newspaper is "The World Is Not on Your Side." Now I'd like to share just a few of the lead articles because the brahu of "We'll Go to War If One Person Is Killed" scares a lot of people, and there are a lot of good writers pointing out some of the problems we're facing, and I call this our dilemma. Peter Costa, United Press, wrote an article, "Change is drastic, the future is uncertain, a decade of disillusionment ending on a question mark." And he goes into the computers are smaller, the mortgages are bigger, the automobiles are shorter, oil has increased 700% in the last 10 years, the face of the future is uncertain. The only thing that was certain about this whole thing, as I mentioned several weeks ago, is that the pendulum has to swing, and this putting in of military dictatorships can't work forever. Even if we have a total world dictatorship, it'll fall apart at the seams. Another article by Robert G. Kaiser from the Washington Post. I'm reading you not sentences from the articles, mostly just the top headline of each of these stories to show you the tone of what's coming out across the country. This article is called "A Painful Close to a Difficult Decade for America." And he also notices that 10 years ago in 1970, Richard Nixon was making a bombing appeal and bombing Cambodia. And this was his quotation: "If when the chips are down, the world's most powerful nation acts like a pitiful, helpless giant, the forces of totalitarianism and anarchy will threaten free nations and free institutions throughout the world." End quote. Richard Nixon was wrong. When a giant nation acts like a bully, we will fall apart eventually because we have no substance, no morals, no intellectual integrity, no appreciation or love of other nationalities and people to back up our right to be in their country. We're nothing but ripping them off. And this article has a cartoon in the corner of one picture of Khomeini and another picture of John Wayne, and the opposition of the Iranians holding Khomeini's picture and the hard hat with John Wayne, and it's called "A Painful Close to a Difficult Decade." Another article, interesting article, in the San Jose Mercury, a reprint from the United Press International and the Washington Post, "Hostages, 22nd Day, No Let-Up in Sight," and another article, "A Hinge in History," and this is by Don Oberdorfer. Fascinating article on history of what is happening. And it goes into the fact that 3 weeks after the seizure of the embassy, the international events are hinging on a way that the government has to make a decision on the way to act, and it will alter the course of history. And he says America is looking beyond the draining demands of day-to-day maneuvers and is just beginning to look beyond the tactical situation to the broader repercussions. We're substantial in numbers. We have 141 embassies, 142 consulates, but they could be thrown over. Many of them, the article says, are in areas of instability where host governments are not always friendly. We didn't bring up our children to think that anybody disliked us, and now we read that 141 embassies in areas of instability, and the host government is not always friendly to us. And the article goes into the dilemma. And we are at a historical point here. We're small. We have a lot of arms, but we're weak. We have put in a man, the Shah of Iran, who we knew was corrupt, we knew was murderous, gave him the instruments to murder, let him put all that money into American banks because it's good for business. We need oil. We don't need another war. We can't afford to antagonize the Muslims. We're even asking the Soviet Union to help us. It's the first time that we can't say to them, look, the Soviets are behind this. We've got to go in and save the world from communism. We're appealing to the Soviets, for goodness sakes, help us here. We're stuck. You help us. And Spain came out this last week and said, if you have a war over in the Middle East, you cannot use our soils to fight. Imagine we put in Franco and gave them their fascism and put in that government into power. And they're saying, if you're going to go to war, don't count on us for anything in terms of land basis. They came out. The hinge in history, the fact that the way history is being altered on the day-to-day level is that this article was written after 22 days when the men were hostages. But every single day that it goes on, The entire world is learning more about the Shah of Iran. This article also brings up the fact that book, The Crash of 79, that contemplated a financial crash based on the manipulation of Iranian assets. You see, the money that's tied up in our American David Rockefeller banks, the links of Rockefeller to Carter, makes an interesting dilemma. The United States is searching for the bottom of the barrel for legal rules because we have to act very, quote, legally or gentlemanly in this situation. Another interesting article, the U.S. is searching for legal remedies in the Iran crisis. Where do we go to? That Khomeini has said that diplomats shouldn't be spies. We know they are, but he's called attention to our agencies, and everybody will be watching our embassies. One of the funniest articles, and I always can find something funny, even in tragic news, was the article from the New York Times, November 23rd, on legal remedies for Iran, and it tells how they were looking up our old treaties with Iran and the International Court of Justice that is held at The Hague and how we should appeal to the International Court and what we can take before the United Nations. And in this article, it mentions that they even got some legal scholars from the government who told the administration that there was a crisis, an incident in Prague in 1618, rather, when two diplomats of the Holy Roman Empire were thrown out of a window by nobles of the government of Bohemia, and that incident touched off the 30-year war. So maybe if two hostages are thrown out of the embassy in Iran, maybe that'll set off our next 30-year war. But it's an interesting thing that in looking for legal precedents to an emotional thing where these people are starved, they're sitting with billions of dollars of guns they don't need. They need food, they need agriculture and housing, education and health and high inflation. The Shah's ripped them out of everything. Our scholars have to go back to the year 1618 to look for some legal justification for the next move when actually the answers are so simple and practical. James Reston comes in with an article on November the 14th, Where Are the Allies? Well, where does he think they are? He says that the niceties of normal diplomatic procedures are not working in Tehran. James Reston, like the whole New York staff that pawned off the Lee Harvey Oswald story and all the other lies through the century, along with Henry Luce and those creeps, how can he expect us to have allies when we rip these people off and they're insecure and they know their own heads are going on the axe? It's like the French Revolution when the heads are falling. Where do they think the allies are going to come from and who's going to speak up? Another article in the Washington Post by Jonathan Randall, Crisis Worsened by Appeals to Home Audiences. And this article is very interesting because as the Iranian crisis goes, Khomeini can reach more people and get his point across, and Jimmy Carter is trying to reach his people through the media. And this article compares, it says the differences involve a superpower, the United States, worried about becoming a pitiful, helpless giant, and a genuinely revolutionary regime seething and long-suppressed national resentment that will rally support by playing David to America's Goliath. That is what I call the dilemma category, and it said that Iran's decision to no longer accept dollars in payment for its oil could be the beginning of the end of America's currency, that this oil transaction is very dangerous for America. And that Japan and Europe will be suspicious. They quote the heads of the Iranian government and Bani Sadr saying that if my strategy succeeds, Japan and Europe will become the economic center of the world, not the United States. And that is exactly what Brzezinski and Kissinger brought us into, that Japan and Germany and the Netherlands are now the economic center of the world and not the United States. And the conflict of the Iranians denouncing American behavior for third world countries and knowing that Europe and Japan can get strong through all this, this article goes on, the crisis is worsened as the home audience watches David and Goliath. There's another article, I have about 70 here, I can't put on one side of a tape, but we'll run through as many as we can. The Real Danger of Being Soft on Iran, and this is by George Will. The U.S. displays its impotence, and it could speed the world slide into anarchy. Well, all of these editorialists have been apologists for these assassinations, for the ripoffs, for the military dictatorships. What they don't see is that the anarchy is coming because we've had policies with no thought, better dead than red, get the Russians at any cost, don't build up these countries, rip them off, whether it's Guyana or Brazil or Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Guatemala, Laos, Cambodia, you name it, Philippines, South Korea, take them and rip them. The anarchy is coming because at the end of World War II, where we had a chance to sit down with the major nations in the Soviet Union and China and decide how we would keep from rearming Germany and Japan and make a decent world for everybody, we got into spreading anarchy by spreading weapons, and now the weapons can be used against us. Another article, an editorial in the New York Times, the pressure on the Ayatollah. The plight of the American hostages in Iran is a painful reminder of the vulnerability of the most powerful nation on earth. Of course we're vulnerable. They're crying in their beer, but every single one of these guys hasn't written a decent editorial. In the 16 years I've been studying the political science of this country, I call this crying over their beer. Another article from London, Ayatollah's action spurs worldwide indignation. And then you read the quotations, and the world everywhere isn't that outraged in the editorials. This article says from London, many editorials say the United States shouldn't try to use military force. Military action probably would not save the lives of the hostages, but it would certainly lead to a conflict that would affect not only the oil production of the entire Mideast, but the political position of the United States in that very region for a long time to come. That's coming out of Munich, Germany. If Europe and Japan are cut off from their oil and Canada cut off from their oil, they're not going to thank Brzezinski, Kissinger, and David Rockefeller, who are cooking this little thing up for themselves to save the money in the Rockefeller banks and to assure their prestige in the Middle East. It's going to boomerang against us, and we'll become more corrupt and more bankrupt, if possible, as each day follows. Marvelous article by Mike Royka from the Chicago Sun. Let's all get together and hate the nasty Iranians, it's called. And it tells about all the radio talk shows whipping up the vigor about them, but it said people will go looking for a Persian patrol. They may find Armenians, Albanians, Turks, Greeks, and even dark-haired Americans who went for winter suntans. It will end up beating up everybody. And we don't know one person from another. We've got them all confused. And then the article goes on about Henry, Dr. Strangelove, Kissinger, David, bottom line, Rockefeller, and how the White House let in the Shah of Iran to set this whole confrontation up. And Ryka goes on, his last sentence in the article says, I wish I knew more about international law, because I sometimes wonder if using our Central Intelligence Agency to put deadly dictators in charge of other countries is even a misdemeanor. See, we're talking about law when we have actually killed Shambe in the Congo and Lumumba, tried to kill Fidel Castro, killed John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, Whitney Young. We raped this country, labor leaders, Mr. Yablonsky, Walter Reuther, Saul Alinsky. We raped, killed, and we're talking about staying within the boundaries of the law. We're ridiculous, and even the editorials now are bringing this out. Mike Royka had another good article Thursday, November 29th. Also from the Chicago Sun, Americans can't stand the stalemate in Iran. The TV-induced hysteria that's going on, that it's a countdown of days, it's a time bomb. Our ships are moving in, and we can't stand it. What we also can't stand is the fact that as it goes on, as I say, the point is getting crossed of more and more the demands and the anger and the hatred towards America. And hatred could be contagious if you're starving. As I mentioned before on a tape 2 weeks ago, when Khomeini says, we haven't anything to lose because we're slaves and we're broke, only you, Mr. Carter, have something to lose in the United States. Royka writes again, America can't stand the stalemate. Chicago Sun-Times by Bruce Ingersoll had an article, Despite Military Might, Carter Can't Make a Move, and it tells how powerless we are to rescue these people, and that putting the Navy in between the Straits of Hormuz and the Persian Gulf and Indian Ocean can block off oil that Japan and Western Europe need and import from Iran, Saudi Arabia, and other countries, and that we couldn't even bring in a rapid deployment force of 100,000 from Fort Bragg. The commander-in-chief of this superpower can't move. They compared him to Lemuel Gulliver, the hero of Gulliver's Travels, and the Lilliputians pinned him down. We can't make a decision one way or the other. It's a dangerous move, and we are held at a standstill by the Ayatollah. John P. Wallace from the Los Angeles Examiner, from Washington Bureau. These are the lead articles. Again, the U.S. faces tough choices over Iran. It goes into the embargo of shipments, the rationale, and the appealing and to the Soviet Union, and the fear that if we went to war, Pakistan has said that they would side with Iran, with the Soviet Union, Iraq, and Afghanistan come in. These are the unknowns. Will we get the war with the Soviet Union if we enter into Iran, because they know it's a launching base for World War III against the Soviet Union, with the missiles being put all over Europe, the atomic missiles? Just a few weeks ago, this was decided by NATO that we would have them all aimed at seven countries, including West Germany, against Russia. So I am sure that if we land a troop over in the Middle East, the Soviet Union isn't going to like that very much and may be forced to move swiftly before we're ready for the next war. They're not going to let us land in Iran and set that up as a launching base this time. Another article, San Francisco Examiner, an editorial, the lapse of civilization in Iran, and it talks about Shah and how we're, you know, having a poor man suffering from a disease, and Khomeini's out of the Middle Ages. The Middle Ages had its dark black periods, and then we also had the Renaissance and a buildup. We have cycles of awareness. We had the French Revolution, the kings and queens of the French court, the French Revolution, the American Revolution. There was the Tsar of Russia and all the jewels and the classical, the music and the culture and the arts, and they were barbarians. Civilization always seems to be lapsing when the people come forward and demand to be fed and housed and clothed. And we call that a lapse of civilization when the people rise up. Civilization and culture is supposed to be in the hands of those 50,000 the Khomeini was talking about. Anything less than that are barbarians. You know, freedom fighters are studying these various revolutions, like the American Revolution. We have a holiday and we celebrate the fact that we put off the British and took things in our own control. But in Africa or the Middle East or in South America, they're called guerrillas. Three guerrillas were killed today. Four guerrillas were killed today. I can't figure out why various civil rights leaders haven't asked the media. They don't talk about niggers or kikes or derogatory terms that we used to use to describe various people. I don't understand why the blacks and the Chicanos or Mexicans or Africans have allowed the word guerrilla to be used by the media instead of saying four soldiers were killed on this side, four soldiers on that side. It's just as noble to fight for your freedom and for your children and the right to eat and the right to not have disease or the right to have health and home. That's just as noble as to fight to maintain the Queen's crown or the Shah's gold telephone or the Shah's gold toilet. So that civilization, by definition, is in the hands of those 50,000 and everyone else is a guerrilla. It was an editorial in the Washington Post by Skip Stiles called Distant Thunder, and it tells about his father, a military man, and the technologies of our Department of Defense. And he describes that our strategy 10 years ago, again, of turning those rice stores into ashes. And he makes the remark that 10 years ago we turned in Cambodia rice stores into ashes and dumped 17 million gallons of defoliants over in Vietnam. War is not clean, and how do you think the world feels it rises up and reacts to 17 million gallons of defoliants? What happened was that our own men came home and were poisoned. Their children have cleft palates and club feet and spinal weaknesses and deformities and mental diseases. And the very GIs that went over to fight, the ones that weren't killed, came home, and those that are having children are having problems with these children. The diseases came back with us, partfold, and wait till the chickens come home to roost and we really feel the effect of all the germs and chemicals and diseases and war diseases, what we've done to the minds of people and the bodies of people, the wanting of a war now and bringing those troops to solve this problem just shows that a handful of people still, like Khomeini said, are mentally diseased. They're mentally sick to keep continuing this game. The New York Times had an editorial November the 14th, In Iran, a Sea of Troubles. The problem with the British government and their hold of the petroleum and then turning the petroleum over to Exxon, Texaco, Standard Oil, and Mobil, and the use of the Gulf there and the complications of getting ourselves involved in Iranian war. another article, unanimous sympathy for the United States expressed by the United Nations. And then there was an article by a member from Guinea-Bissau and a quotation. I looked to see how unanimous it was, and there were just a couple of countries quoted there. The headline says unanimous, but the general had the feeling that if this war goes on, nobody is safe. It was an article, the lead article says that there's always two sides to every issue and that people are behind us, but when you read the article, it's hard to find a unanimous feeling there. Another article sent out to the media, outrage at Iran, the world backs Carter's stand. And then I read the article to see who's behind Jimmy Carter, and the first country mentioned is South Africa, the outrage of this. Well, South Africa, Israel, and Iran were very close buddies, and it'd be natural that they would be quoted. And then there was a quotation from an official from Tanzania, his feelings about Iran. So again, the South Africa or Tanzania or the quotation from Guinea-Bissau doesn't mean the whole world. Another article, Americans unlikely to mount a raid on Iran. It talks about the military options and the impotence of the United States that we probably can't go in. Article in the San Jose Mercury, Santa Clara University professor says, United States should keep cool. He said, I don't think threats to cut off food and threats to invade are of any use. This is a professor named David Skinner. Those threats simply indicate to traditional Muslim society a failure of spiritual values on the part of the United States. We will not accept responsibility for what we did over there. And when they point it out, we say, we won't buy your oil. We won't send you food. We'll close up the money that you have in the United States. And this professor, who's an expert on the Middle East, said these things won't work, and I'm afraid they won't work in other countries, too. They'll learn to become self-sufficient and not rely on the United States because they see us and how we react in a time of anger. There's another article about Lebanon and the Shiite Muslims inspired by Khomeini in Iran. This is a long article from the Washington Post, November 13, 1979. The Shiite Muslims inspired by Iran, a new Arab force. And it tells about them getting together and all of a mind, a resurgent mind, and an awareness of what is going on and the desire to link with Khomeini, that the Muslims in Beirut and Lebanon are a strong group, 900,000 members in this area, and that they would link up with Khomeini and that they're sympathetic to him. And we better not get too involved in the Persian Gulf because we may have more than we really want to face if these various people get together. It may become contagious and we'd be blocked off completely from the Middle East. Another article, the New York Times, November the 15th, Arabs facing new doubts on investments of oil money. President Carter's decision to freeze official Iranian assets will force major oil exporters to reconsider the wisdom of accumulating surplus fund in Western economies. Arab money has gone into farms and farmland and real estate all over the United States. If they begin to unload that and ask for their cash back, we'd be in pretty hard straits. And this article suggests that they may invest it in other countries. If it's going to be tied up here, they feel insecure. These are treacherous times. When we dropped the atomic bomb in Japan, many people said we won the war, but we lost the peace. You can't wage war without oil, and you can't win oil countries by bombing and destroying the oil that belongs to another country. We can't protect our future or our embassies. We can't protect our soldiers or people that go around overthrowing other countries. The only solution to this thing is to examine ourselves, to admit our errors, apologize for the past, and don't repeat the mistakes. That's an idealistic approach. It won't happen as a nation. It can happen to us as people, as individuals. We have to act intelligently and intellectually to a complicated problem and not respond like spoiled people with a bat beating up the rest of the world. That's the only way we can live our lives from day to day and have any sanity. Well, this is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. I'll be back with you next week. There's lots of news. Keep well and take care. Have a good week.